WNYC. Welcome to the Snap Judgment Live Look Back Celebration. Yes, you have the very best seat in the house. My name is Glenn Washington. Get your beverage of choice, because this incredible hour features just some of the amazing storytellers that have rocked the Snap stage with a beat. Of course, always with a beat. I'm going to get right into it. A guy who we generally save as the designated hitter, but today, he starts the show.
And now, put your hands together for Mr. James Judd.
You know, when Glenn asked me to do this show, I was hesitant because I knew that I would have to portray myself as a 10-year-old. And if there are two things I really, really cannot stand, it's adults playing children and children. And then I thought, why not? It's 1975. It's the first Tuesday in June. It's the semifinals of the Foothill Elementary School 5th grade book report competition. And right now, I am this close to being named top 5th grade book reporter. I know, it's huge. Now, picture me at 10. I already stand 5'9" tall. I have a huge head of curly red hair, a pear-shaped body. I'm the type of kid who wears long sleeve shirts and pants even during summer. I'm a nerd. I'm an outcast. But I have convinced myself that when I win this book report competition, it is gonna turn it all around for me. And I am so ready to be part of the in crowd. But there is one person standing between me and victory, and her name is Mary Applebaum. Mary Applebaum is the second most popular girl in the entire fifth grade. Felicia Johnson is the first most popular girl because she already has boobs. But Mary Applebaum is a very close number two, and she's in my class, which means I'm gonna have to beat Mary Applebaum today if I'm gonna make it to the big show tomorrow. And Mary Applebaum, oh, make no mistake, she wants to win this competition. She thinks she's got the whole thing all wrapped up. I mean, with the other kids, she tries to play it cool. She's like, ah. I don't care. I just think it's really nice that everyone has a chance. Yeah, I'm not buying it. Because I see her for what she is. She is a ruthless competitor. But the fact is, this competition will be won by the person who has picked the biggest and hardest book to read. And true, I don't know what book she's picked. And yes, it worries me. But she doesn't know what book I picked either. Now, I know. I know that I am not cute and perky and good at tetherball and everybody's favorite person like Mary Applebaum, I know. So I know that if I'm gonna win this thing, I need a book that's really big. I need something that's just gonna put me over the hump. I need something edgy, something ripped from the headlines. So the book I've chosen is My Search for Patty Hearst by Stephen Weed. It's not a random choice. I have been obsessed with a missing 19-year-old newspaper heiress since she was kidnapped about a year ago, not 40 miles from where I was growing up outside of Berkeley, California. And since nobody knows where she's been hiding since she apparently joined the group that kidnapped her and started to help them rob banks around San Francisco, it seems plausible, to me at least, that maybe she is still hiding somewhere in the area. And many times after school, I would take my miniature dachshund Brownie, and we would scour the neighborhood looking for clues. As it turns out, she was hiding in the area. Brownie and I were so ahead of our times. Well, at this point, everyone else in the classroom was taking their shot at this thing, except for me and Mary Applebaum, and I don't see any other real threat to my ascension to glory. Well, right now, our fifth grade teacher, Mrs. Hewsong, beehive, cat eye glasses, scratchy woolly shoes, smells like powder, lots of rings, big clunky shoes, calls Mary to the front of the room. Hi, everyone. My name is Mary Applebaum. You guys! Stop clapping! I haven't won yet. My name is Mary Applebaum. And the book I've chosen for today's semifinals of the Foothill Elementary School 5th Grade Book Report Competition is Little Women by Louisa May Alcott. It's a really good book. Well, I am not gonna lie to you. Mary Applebaum nailed it. I mean, she really nailed it. She had characters on the blackboard. She quoted the book from memory. She said something in French. I don't even know what that was about. She did a little dance. And then she had people singing at the end, and people were crying. I mean, oh my God, she nailed it. Oh my God, she nailed it. Oh my God, she really nailed it. Oh my God. Well, Mary finishes to a thunderous ovation, and Mrs. Hewsong calls my name. But as I get up to approach the front of the classroom, a teacher from another classroom comes in, and she knocks on the doorway, and she beckons for Mrs. Hewsong to come out into the hallway and talk to her. And Mrs. Hewsong says, "Go on, James, just get started without me. I'll be right back." And she's gone. Well, this is not part of my plan. And just as I approach the front of the room, beam of light bursts through the curtains of the back of the room and lands in a dazzling white pool of light right in front of my feet. And I step into that light and I think, spotlight. So I ask, how many people here have ever been kidnapped? Nobody raises their hands. So I ask, how many people here have ever been locked in a closet? A couple of people raise their hands. I ask, for a month, and the hands go down. Well, by the time Mrs. Hewsong comes back into the classroom, I've already drawn a number of pictures on the blackboard, including all the names of all the major members of the Symbionese Liberation Army, the SLA, the group that kidnapped Patty, Donald DeFries, Nancy Lee Perry, Bill and Emily Harris, you know the rest. Over here is a seven-headed snake, which is the group's trademark and frequent backdrop for publicity photos. Here is a crude layout of the Hibernia Bank where Patty reintroduced herself to the world as a member of the terrorist organization. And here is a stick figure of Patty as she appeared that day, reintroducing herself to the world as Tanya. A tough chick bank robber with a machine gun and a wig with a wavy curl. Well, Mrs. Hewsong comes back into the classroom and she stands in the doorway. And I can tell she's discombobulated by the pictures on the blackboard and by the silence in the room. Because just at that moment, I was having everybody write their own ransom notes. You don't get that in Little Women. Mrs. Hewsong says, "James, what book have you got there?" I say, "My Search for Patty Hearst." She says, "James, That is completely inappropriate material for the fifth grade. Sit down, I said, but I'm not finished yet. She said, oh yes, you most certainly are finished. I ought to wash your mouth out for bringing that filth into my classroom. Now I know, 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 now I know, now I know, now I know. Now I know, now I know, I know that what I said next was wrong. I know that now I know. But you at least have to admire my commitment to the moment. When I turned to my fifth grade teacher as a 10-year-old and said, oh yeah? Well, maybe I should lock you in the supply closet for a month until you start to see things my way. Power to the people! Rise up, my revolutionary brothers and sisters! Now I know. Well, the principal calls my mother and tells her to come pick me up from work. And my mother is livid. Not because of the book. She gave me the book. But because she hates to be called away from her new part-time job at IBM, where she is becoming something of an expert. In the hot new field of word processing. Oh, it was big. The first word processors changed everything. It was a very exciting time to type. My mother helped erase the scourge of liquid paper. Who wouldn't want to be a part of that? Well, she drives our 75 Ford Granada back to our suburban ranch house in a fury. She slams on the brake. I try to sneak out the side door. She says, oh, no, you don't. You're not getting off that easily. Since you're so good at remembering people's names and all the terrible things they do to each other, I have a little job for you to do for me while you're at home today. You do it, and I won't tell your father what happened at school. Well, this was not an offer that I could refuse. I come from something of a strange family. When my parents met, my father was a missionary from Utah. My mother was a cocktail waitress from Las Vegas. I like to tell people I was really the only hard-drinking Mormon in kindergarten that could shoot crabs. A man is lying in the hospital bed. The nurse comes in. She says, I'm going to take your temperature. Would you like an oral thermometer or a rectal thermometer? He says, what's the difference? She says, the taste. The point is, I was a star in need of a gig. So I said to my mother, okay, well, what is it? What do you want me to do? She said, I want you to watch The Young and the Restless for me and tell me what happens. Now, my mother was addicted to soap operas, but now that she had this new part-time job, it was killing her not to know what was happening on her favorite soaps, especially The Young and the Restless. I mean, this was the land of time before time when there were no VCRs or TiVos or DVRs. It wasn't even Betamax at this point, so... You know, it was really killing her not to know what was going on. She says, it comes on at noon, channel 2. You do a good job. And this whole day will be our little secret. So I watched. And wow, what an eye-opener. Later that night, after the rest of my family had gone to bed, my mother comes into my room. She pulls up a chair next to the bed. She turns on my overhead light. She gives me a shake and she says, well... What happened? Lauren was buried alive on the eve of her wedding to Paul by a jealous ex-boyfriend. Is she still alive? Yes. She managed to drill an air hole with a diamond on her engagement ring. And it popped out of the ground just as Paul was walking by. Well, did he dig her up? No. He didn't have a shovel, so he went looking for one. And he ran into Nikki, and Nikki said she had a shovel and she'd give it to him. But then Nikki said that she's in love with Paul too, and she wants him to marry her tomorrow instead of Lauren. And if Paul is okay with that, well then, maybe they should just leave Lauren where she is. Well, what did Paul say? Nothing. He opened his mouth to speak. And then he closed it. And then he opened it. And then he closed it. And then the show was over. Now, I don't know how many of you here watch soap operas, but that's what they do to you. They find some way to get you interested. And then they make you wait and wait and wait and wait for the whole hour until they finally get you the one thing you want to hear someone say. Then they open their mouth to speak and then they close it. Open, close, open, close, open, close, like a fish. And the screen fades to black and you have to wait for a day or a week or a month or forever to find out what it was they were going to say. My mother says, oh, that is a perfect way to drive a person crazy. Okay, you can stay home tomorrow too. Oh, what the heck, there's only a week left of school, you can skip the whole thing. Well, by the end of that summer, my mother was paying me $1 a day to stay inside and watch her soaps for her, and then act them out for her when she gets home from work. Well, needless to say, it was a great summer. It changed me. It changed me. I learned things watching soaps I could never learn in elementary school. Things like how to walk into a room and cause a scene. I learned that no matter whom you marry, you're always gonna wind up with her sister. I learned how to hold on to a grudge for dear life like it was the last life vest on the Titanic. But the most important lesson I learned watching soaps was that you gotta be ready. You gotta be ready, because if you are, at least once in everyone's life will come one golden, shiny moment when you can emerge from the shadows at a wedding or a funeral or a courtroom and announce to the stunned assembly that yes, in fact, I am very much alive. Summer ends. It does. I thought it was over. It's not. I keep going. Summer ends, as we all hope this show will one day. Summer ends, I go back to school, and as luck would have it, Mary Applebaum and I are once again classmates. And at the end of the first day of school, we find ourselves alone together in the classroom. Mary is at her usual place at the front of the room. I'm at my usual place at the back of the room. But Mary, while she can sense that something is different about me, something has changed. And she gets kind of kittenish as she puts on her backpack and she says, I just want you to know that I feel really bad about what happened at last year's book report competition. I'm sure you didn't know your book was dirty and bad. Anyway, I guess you also know I won the whole thing. It shouldn't come as any surprise. Little Women wins every year. The trophy looks really nice in my room. From my place at the back of the room, I get up and I begin slowly to approach Mary Applebaum, saying nothing but speaking volumes with my eyes. And I get right in front of her, right in for my close-up. And then I grab her and I kiss her. And when I let go, she kind of swoons for a moment. And then she grabs me and she kisses me back. I think, yes, victory is mine. I may not have won the trophy, but I won the girl who won the trophy. Even if I don't really want her. It's good enough for me. And I break our embrace. And I turn and begin to walk quickly out of the room. And just at that moment, Mary Applebaum runs forward. She says, James, wait. James, wait. James. James, wait. Tell me. What about us? And I turn slowly back to Mary Applebaum. Look her right in the eye. And in my very best soap opera voice, I say,
the amazing James Judd. And if you missed even a moment of this story, run. Do not walk to your phone device thingy and subscribe to the Snap Judgment Podcast on iTunes, on Stitcher, however you do it, do it. And you can see it, this performance in glorious Technicolor, the full uncensored filmed version on our website, snapjudgment.org. The Snap Judgment Look Back Special returns in a moment with a piece where one man tries to warn his Nana against certain calamity and the very worst thing that can happen to you in church. For real, when the Look Back Special continues, stay tuned. Welcome back to Snap Judgment Live from WNYC, the Look Back Special. Now, up next on this program, I'm so delighted to give you a taste of our very first live show ever. No one knew what was about to go down. And what went down became an instant Snap classic. Sensitive listeners, please note, this story contains references to sexuality.
The next guy coming up on here, in addition to being one of my boys, he fulfills the watchword of today, which is multi-planetary, multi-dimensional, multi-talented. The brother put out his own album last year, wrote his own stage play, sings, dances, a poet extraordinaire. Please join your hands together. A big Snap Judgment welcome from Mr. Joshua Walters.
Did you know that you can get porn through Netflix? I learned this while hanging out with my grandmother, Nana, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Nana's a nice woman in her 90s with short gray hair, a different outfit for every day of the week, but she has no idea what she gets on Netflix. A DVD came in the mail with a very unporn-like title. It was Robert Vincent in the Library. So there we are, in the beige-colored TV room, and we put the DVD in the machine, and in comes Pops. Now it's Pops, Nana, family time. And we sit down, and the movie begins. first screen. It's a little grainy. It's kind of a grainy black screen. This is kind of a low budge black. A low budget. Why is it so low budge? And the first title comes up and it says Playboy Entertainment. And I say, hey, I think this is porn. We're not watching porn, they say. We're just watching a nice movie from Netflix. Okay? We're not watching porn. Don't be ridiculous. The opening scene is a man in a fedora hat, sharply dressed in a bar, who approaches a nice woman in a blue velvet number. And they're sitting there at the bar, and they're chatting it up, but they're chatting just a little too fast. Just the first minute of this movie, the conversation is moving a little too fast. And I'm thinking, this movie is just going too fast for normal movies. And I get this sneaking suspicion. I say, hey! I think this is porn. This is not porn, they say. This is not porn. We're not watching porn. We're just watching a nice movie, okay? We're just watching a nice movie. Stop saying that. We're just watching this, okay? Just calm down and just watch it with us. But now the man in the fedora hat is getting closer to the woman at the bar, and it's become a close-up of their faces and their mouths are starting to get closer, and I just have this sneaking suspicion that something terrible is about to happen, and people need to know about it, and I say, hey, Nana, Dad! Hey, I think this is porn! And they say, will you stop all that ruckus? This is not porn. We're not watching porn, okay? Stop all that ruckus. You're being so annoying. Stop that. We're just trying to watch a nice movie here. And the next scene is Money Shot. Coin in the slot. Money Shot. Coin in the slot. 100 zoom focus. Coin in the slot. Coin in the slot. Cha-ching! Coin in the slot. Money Shot. Cha-ching! 100 zoom focus. 100 zoom focus. 100 zoom focus. 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 And they're like, look what you've done! And they're mad at me, and their faces are red and angry, and they're angry at me and frustrated and embarrassed. And I've never seen Nana's face so angry. I've never seen Dad's face so angry. And they're over me, and they're angry, and they try to get the DVD out of the machine, and it won't come out. And finally they get it out, they throw it to the floor, and they storm out of the room. And that's how I learned you can get porn through Netflix.
That was Snap favorite Joshua Walters. And yes, I did get to meet Nana. She's just as sweet as Joshua described. Our next storyteller, though, been with us from the beginning and just got herself married. Oakland's first lady of storytelling, Joyce Lee. Listener discretion is advised for sensitive listeners and for those with small children.
You're so vain. You probably think this poem is about... It is, Jive. turkey it is. The phone has rang 5 times in the last hour. I got 26 messages on my answering machine with you calling me crazy. I'm as sane as you'll let me be. You knew when you met me in a crowded bar full of poets, I was as drunk as the Titanic, hollering cat calls at your ass like you were way across the room when you were less than 2 feet from me, what I was. Sweetheart, I'm only as crazy as my love is. And my love checks your Facebook every single day. It looks at you out of the corner of my left eye when I got something on my mind, but I'm not gonna admit how much stalking got the thought there in the first place. My love has the most sincere smile, smothering sociopathic thoughts. And it's glad I'm wrapped in an intimidating package, that way I be checking the mother that be looking at you without having to utter one word. My love starts fights just because it wants you to grab me by my throat and dominate me, but I'm not going to ask because I'm too much of a lady. My love is rubbing alcohol in your Visine crazy when I think you got me twisted. It runs a straight razor across your chest when you're drunk and sleep so I can see your actual blood and sweat in this relationship when I miss it. It's an angel to your family. It's a rebel to mine. It's a straight jacket for your wondering eye to keep it in line from going crazy. The phone is ringing. Hey, I'm sitting here wearing your favorite t-shirt, soaking my feet in green jello, eating cheese puffs and watching Fraggle Rock. You know what, sweetie? Everything happens for a reason. For instance, I busted the windows out your car so you could get the air I assumed you were talking about when you said I was suffocating you. And no, sweetheart, I did not cut your brake lines to kill you. It's just that you take breaks your way, I take breaks mine. It's not my fault you failed to listen in between lines when someone you call crazy is speaking, I told you. The second day we were together, over vegetarian omelets and orange juice. Don't hurt me. You said you wouldn't. You loved me for a time and then said you couldn't love anyone at any time. So who is that skinny? That's why she ain't got no windows on her car either. Hey, you brought her into our relationship. So if I'm unhappy, then all three of us are unhappy. And unhappy is not the same as crazy. Crazy would cry and pick up the phone and discuss the issue until I looked crazy. Crazy would express in great girly details about how heartbroken I am until I felt crazy, while unhappy just tends to do some crazy things. To remind you, lioness, who it is you were dealing with in the first place, hello. I'm the same drunk you met in a crowded bar full of poets, enjoying driving your ass crazy.
The amazing Joyce Lee. And again, if you missed the moment, don't be downcast. Get the podcast. Film versions of every single story on this show are available right now at snapjudgment.org. When the Snap Judgment Look Back story extravaganza continues, Shannon Kasin tells everybody his business, and it's even worse than you thought. In just a moment, stay tuned. WNYC, the Look Back Special.
So, when I was a teenager, I used to do a lot of stupid things. I would move to countries I'd never heard of before. I would threaten dudes that were 3 times bigger than me. And it was because of a trick a monk taught me. He said, Glenn, if you've got stress here, move it over here. If you're feeling something you don't want, put it on someone else. imagine someone. So I imagined a golden man. Looked just like my monk friend. Only had gold nose, gold hair, gold teeth. So if I was feeling upset, I put it over on him. I was feeling shy, I'd put it on the golden man. When I was feeling stressed, he felt stressed. And I could go about my business. It was a pretty good deal. Except for, it was a catch. I could never look the golden man in the eye. He tried sometimes to sneak up on me. But I didn't let him do it. Didn't let him do it for years. Never caught me. Till one day, driving on the Golden Gate Bridge, not too long ago, I looked up in the sky and I saw him blink. I couldn't breathe. I called my friend the monk. I said, "Look, what do I do?" He said, "You need to go home." I went home. Figured that maybe a shower, some soap and some water, it'll fix this. I was in the shower and I saw the golden man blink at me from the tiles. I passed out and I'm wondering, is it gonna be like this? Am I gonna be in a spot where I'm running from ghosts in my own house? I was scared to open up doors. I was scared of what might jump out from behind cabinets. It was becoming crippling. He said to go home. Go home. And I thought about it. I thought, go home. Maybe, when he said go home, you need to go back to where it all started. Maybe what he meant was, it's time I chase some Midwestern thunderstorms. Maybe it's time I got in the field with some Michigan fireflies. Maybe it's time I put a little Zingerman's deli up in my belly. Maybe it's time my kids got to meet their grandmother. Maybe it's time I got to hang out with my uncles on the porch and eat some barbecue. Maybe it's time me and my cousins play basketball again. Maybe it was time I came back home. Maybe it's time I came back home to where it all got started. And you know what? Ever since I've touched down here in Michigan, ever since, it's not the golden man chasing me. It's been me. I've been chasing the golden man. It is so good to be here, Ann Arbor. It is so good to be back home. It is so good to be back and see everybody. I'm so happy to see all these people. My mama's here today. My best friends are here today. My cousin's here today. People I grew up with, my little kid, are here. Jen White was here today. Ladies and gentlemen, I can't tell you how happy we are to be here. And I didn't come alone. Oh no, I didn't come alone. I brought some friends. Please say hello to Mr. Alex Mandel. To get right with yourself, the dangerous David Brandt. Our next guest tonight is the second best looking bald-headed black guy in tonight's show. All right, he's the first best looking. A former Grand Slam mop champion. It is my distinct pleasure to introduce Mr. Shannon Case.
If you died today, where would you go? I used to do what's called street evangelism. That's when you go out into the crowded streets and basically you annoy people for Jesus. I wasn't raised to be a Jesus freak. My dad is an original Detroit player, gator shoes, women, money, running the streets. He had heard that his dad, he never met him, was a fast-talking, womanizing preacher who ran the streets. So I guess it was in my blood to run the streets in some way, except I was on the corner, hey, you want to talk to me about Jesus? I started going to this church in my early 20s, and I sold out at every service, an usher, an armor bearer, reading my Bible, living a celibate life, no women, a kid just trying my best to please God. I loved evangelism. We would go out in twos. I was paired up with the church secretary. Her name was Ethel. I love old-fashioned names. My mom's name is Bessie, and I'm a mama's boy. Ethel was fine, too. Tall, long legs, that's my thing. Amazons with vintage names. I had been celibate for 6 years at that point, but I still knew if a woman was fine, and she was. We would be out annoying heathens for Jesus together, and we weren't making people uncomfortable so much as getting comfortable with one another. And people at the church noticed that we had this chemistry together. But it was one of these churches where, like, the women at the church were Jesus's girl until you put a ring on it. So they split us up in evangelism. And the pastor told me, stop hanging around her. But stolen water tastes sweet. And bread eaten in secret is delicious. That's Proverbs 9:17, if anybody brought their Bibles, I don't know. So we were in a mutual friend's wedding, me and Ethel. And the bride paired us to walk down the aisle together because we were tall. And I remember I spun her around, and she laughed, the whole church laughed. Something about weddings. After the reception, we found ourselves alone, just me and Ethel. And we forgot about celibacy. We forgot about the pastor's rules, forgot about sin. We kissed, we touched. We held each other. And after it was done and that 6 year Jones had ended, I felt defeated. I felt like I had let God down. I remember I sat at the end of the bed while she dressed, and I felt naked. I mean, I really was naked. I hadn't put my clothes on yet, but y'all know what I'm talking about. She went to work the next day. She worked at the church. She was the secretary. And she told the pastor what happened. He calls me and tells me, come meet him at his office. I remember I walked past Ethel. She was acting busy at her desk. I went in his office and sat in his big chair. And this is a man I respected. I know he knew how bad I felt. He came in, he was like, that's why I told you not to hang around her. I knew this was gonna happen. The next Sunday, at the beginning of the service, he calls me and Ethel to the front of the church. And the pastor says, tell him what happened. Full congregation, even in the balcony. And we confess our sins to everyone, in detail. Ethel just stares at the ground. She says a few words. Me, I say, hey, everyone. I'm sorry for committing the sin of fornication with Ethel here. We went to the wedding. It was a nice wedding, and we were rubbing against each other. And then we had sex, and we're not married, and that's not right. I was crying and everything. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Ethel was accepted back into the fold. She was a good secretary, I guess. I was pushed out, discommunicated. Ethel never spoke to me again, ever. The pastor never spoke to me again, ever. After no communication with anyone at the church, my friends, roommates, I got the picture and left. Now, about 6 years later, and I'm gonna be honest with you, I wasn't celibate for those 6 years. I was getting it in, as they say. But about 6 years later, I saw a news report that the church went bankrupt. All the property was foreclosed on, and the church closed down. Now, I'm not saying that happened because the pastor did me wrong. I'm not saying that. It was one of these prosperity churches. The pastor was buying helicopters, jets, big houses, BMW, stupid stuff. All this stuff, I don't know that really, if that really helps people. I wonder if the pastor went in front of the whole congregation and confessed for ruining the church's finances. I doubt it. I think he just moved to Florida. If you died today, where would you go? I think heaven has to be more than just good timing with asking forgiveness. It has to be. The other day, I ran into this kid, and he asked me to talk about Jesus. And I stopped and talked to him, and I could see myself in him, trying my damnedest to live right for God and for the approval of the people around me. I prayed with him the whole nine. And after it was over and he was going to go off to annoy other people for Jesus, I said, hey, kid, don't be afraid to live a little. Trust me, God will still love you. And before he left, I said, hey, inside scoop, if you mess up, don't tell the whole congregation. It's really none of their business. Take them to church, folks.
The amazing Shannon Kaysen, the Homemade Stories Podcast. Get that. Every single piece of music played live that you've heard for this entire show was composed by our resident musical genius, Alex Mandel. Played live by Alex and the Snap players, David Brandt and Tim Frick. Big thanks to Michigan Radio, KLW in San Francisco, KPCC in Los Angeles, and WBEZ in Chicago. Did I mention, but if you missed even a moment, all you got to do to get the Snap Judgment Podcast is go get the Snap Judgment Podcast. Amazing stories every week delivered for free. If you hear of a better deal, take it. Put a name to the face, go to snapjudgment.org to see video of every single story featured on this week's episode. Yeah, Ira Glass is touring the country dancing around, but know this. You can't dance like me. And even though this is not the news, I've got news. we're doing a brand new Snap Judgment Live in Oakland, California on February 27th, our biggest show ever. Get tickets at snapjudgment.org. And know that this is WNYC.